WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Next week, the PBS series POV will feature a documentary about what it's like to be a Black homosexual, marginalized by African-American activists who are uncomfortable with their homosexuality, and gay activists who don't relate to your Blackness. The documentary is called Tongues Untied. The title refers to finding the courage to speak the truth about who you are. And the truth, as it is told by filmmaker Marlon Riggs, includes nudity, scenes of men kissing, profanity, and the racial and sexual slurs which he's been subjected to. Because of the imagery and the language, about 18 stations in the top 50 markets have decided not to run this film. Coming up, we're going to talk to station representatives about making this decision, and we'll hear from the filmmaker Marlon Riggs. First, to give you a sense of what we're talking about, I want to play you a clip from the film. And here's where this story about art and broadcasting gets tricky for us. We want you to hear how Riggs is using language in Tongues Untied, and yet we've decided to bleep out the profanity. A difficult decision that has its absurd dimensions, but the fact is that the FCC and most stations that broadcast Fresh Air have different daytime and nighttime standards regulating what is called indecency, and on most stations we are a daytime show where the standards are stricter. This excerpt of Tongues Untied features the filmmaker Marlon Riggs telling some of his own story.
At age 11, we moved to Georgia. I graduated to new knowledge.
Homo.
You don't know how to kiss?
Homo.
My best friend asked, shocked. I didn't know what to do with a girl when I lost at Spin the Bottle.
Homo.
I'll show you, he said, his brown eyes inviting. We practiced kissing for weeks, dry, wet, French, till his older brother called us a name.
Homo.
What's a homo? I asked.
Punk, faggot, freak.
I understood. We stopped kissing. Best friend became worst enemy.
Motherfucking cunt.
Age 12, they bussed me to Hepzibah Junior High on the outskirts of Augusta.
Motherfucking cunt.
A spray-painted sign on the wall greeted me.
Niggas, go home.
The rednecks hated me.
Motherfucking.
Because I was one of only two Blacks placed in 8A, the class for Hepzibah's best and brightest.
Niggas, go home.
The Blacks hated me.
Uncle Tone.
Because they assumed my class status made me uppity.
Uncle Tone.
Assume my silence as superiority.
An excerpt of Tongues Untied, an experimental documentary that mixes monologues, poetry, music, and dance. To find out about how PBS made the decision to schedule this controversial program, we called Jennifer Lawson, the head of programming at PBS. I asked if she was concerned about the program violating standards of indecency and obscenity.
We've had our own legal counsel review the program, and that it's our assessment that the program will not and does not violate those standards. And that certainly was a consideration that we made in the offering of it to our stations. This language is not the first time that it has been presented on public television or on broadcast television. I think what makes Tongues Untied more of a focus in respect to the language there is the presentation in the context of a program that deals with issues of sexuality.
Now, is that what program directors who aren't carrying the show are telling you, or is that just deducing?
Program directors who are not carrying the show are making a determination based upon the appropriateness of the material of this program and the way in which their stations are viewed on a local level. Many of our public television stations present themselves in their communities as family channels and make the promise to the community that the material that's being offered is appropriate for family viewing. This is a program where, by its very nature, we have there is a viewer advisory, which suggests that some of the material, that the subject matter and the language that's used in the programming is not necessarily appropriate for viewing by younger children. And so it's entirely reasonable that stations would elect not to carry the program at all.
So you're not disturbed that some stations aren't carrying it. You just accept that there's going to be different approaches, different editorial standards in different parts of the country.
Very definitely, very definitely. And that is something that I think that is that we certainly respect, and that we have that it's that's a much better approach than PBS as a national service deciding not to carry and not make the program available for any communities.
Let me ask you, we're in a time now where there have been a lot of challenges from especially the religious conservative groups, challenges against sexually explicit or homosexual art, and you're running this show in that climate. Are you worried at all about losing funders or losing listener support because of the broadcast?
We certainly cannot ignore the fact that for many people in this country, any issues around sexuality, and particularly homosexuality, being raised in a public context are considered offensive, considered in bad judgment, and that's something that we will, you know, we certainly take into consideration. On the other hand, we feel that it is part of our responsibility as public service broadcasters to provide to our viewers as full an overview of the reality of the circumstances of people in our country, and that the issues, the people presented in this film, the reality of people who are who face in their lives both the experience of being Black or Asian American and gay, and the complexity of that, is a story that should be told. And that's part of what we see as the alternative role of public television, to present those stories that are not told. And in doing so, one does risk controversy. One does risk a lack of support.
Jennifer Lawson is head of programming at PBS. Jesse Bowers is vice president for programming at the South Carolina Educational TV Network. He decided not to broadcast Tongues Untied.
After viewing the program and looking at the content, both language and some nudity, we felt that it just did not meet our community standards. We took a very in-depth look at it, and for those reasons, just decided that we could not air this program.
One of the thorny parts of community standards, looking at it historically, is, for instance, during the Civil Rights Movement, there were stations in the South that wanted to pull the plug on the network news when the network news was showing civil rights demonstrations. Community standards can sometimes be against free speech and be against showing things that oppose their political views or oppose their sensibility. So can you talk to me a little bit about trying to figure out, like, where to draw the line within community standards?
I think you're right when you say that community standards can oppose political views or political ideologies. And I think that's where the real fine line is in terms of not bowing to community pressures, but when clearly it is a matter of language and nudity. I don't think that there's a comparison there. I think that it's clearly defined that certain four-letter words are just not acceptable.
WTVS in Detroit is another station that won't be showing Tongues Untied. Bob Larson is the president and general manager of the station. He said their decision was based on the program's imagery and language. I asked if it was the four-letter words.
No, not necessarily four-letter type words. We're talking about the words that were explicit, graphically explicit in their description of sexual activity, and it was unremitting in many ways. So our issue was not with the subject of the program, nor with the fact that we feel that in many ways it's a powerful program. Our decision was based upon the acceptability or the suitability of language for over-the-air television.
Now, what were the images that you found objectionable?
It was a combination of the images and the words themselves. I think to select any one image is not fair to the program. In fact, I would not even dream of asking Mr. Riggs to change the program, because I think it has its own kind of a compelling kind of experimental documentary.
Is your concern about the FCC and FCC regulations about language, or is it more just the standards of your viewers?
No, it's the standards of ourselves as programmers. It's not the standard of our viewers. It's the standards that we're trying to protect as a station in what we offer to our viewers. It is a quality judgment. It is indeed a value judgment. It's the kind of a judgment that an editor makes every day in terms of should he print this piece or not print the piece. And we have made that judgment saying that it is not something that we want on the front page of our air magazine, if you will. That doesn't necessarily condemn the program because there are other outlets for the program. There are museums, as you know, or theaters, or even paid television. But this is an open airwave, and we come as uninvited or invited guests into the homes of our viewers, and I think that responsibility really guided us in this decision.
Of course, viewers have channel selectors and on and off switches.
That's true. They do. But they also have an expectation that we have created over the years in terms of the quality that they can expect, the fairness, the objectivity, and the taste. And so this was that issue.
You know, public broadcasters and radio and TV are in a kind of unique situation in that the listeners and the viewers are also the funders. And I think there's always an awareness that viewers who are very alienated, one of the first things they do is they write you a letter saying, I'll never pledge again. Does that kind of stuff enter into your programming decisions at all, or is that something you try to not think about?
I think we try to avoid that. I think to make the question based upon the fact that we're going to be accused of censorship in this issue, for example, or that we're going to lose viewers if we do air it, we really tried to keep both of those components out of our mind as we looked at the program itself. And we have to look at it and say, does it have inherent value? And we said, yes, it has inherent value. Is there anything that keeps us from airing it? Yes, the language unfortunately kept us from airing it. But please don't categorize or stereotype those who say no as being in some way homophobic or in some way opposed to controversy. That's a mistake also. This is an independent programming decision.
We'll speak with the director of Tongues Untied after this short break. This is Fresh Air. The film that we've been discussing, Tongues Untied, is a very personal film for the director, Marlon Riggs. He is on camera discussing his experiences as a gay black man. Riggs won an Emmy for his earlier documentary, Ethnic Notions, about black stereotypes. Riggs didn't make Tongues Untied for TV. He was surprised and pleased when PBS picked it up. He thinks many broadcasters have a hypocritical double standard when it comes to determining what is obscene and indecent.
When you show, in this case, two men tenderly kissing, or you deal with a language of rage in which people who have been suppressed, bottled up, denied any humanity, denied a space in society, finally learning to speak, and speaking with the anger of their emotion about that the feeling of having been suppressed and denied a place for so long, then for some reason that is termed as obscene, an affront, confrontational, and therefore unworthy of being put on television.
If you were approached by television to do a documentary on a similar subject or on the same subject, do you think you'd make a different kind of film knowing that it would be broadcast? I mean, I'm thinking even a lot of feature films, there's kind of like two versions made at the same time, one with language for the theaters and one with language for TV.
No, I would not do that because that gets to the basic point of what public television, I think, should be about. Either you can make television, you can make work that, in fact, is designed really to reassure the status quo, to play into the myths of who audiences think they are and who they think we as the subjects of our work are, and that in no way really challenges us to rethink all of the terms and all of the frameworks by which we define ourselves and others. Or you can make work which in fact does that it does challenge, that it does stimulate, that it provokes. And what I chose to do and was very clear about doing with this work was reflecting the truth of my experience as a black gay man, not to compromise it, not to situate it in a way so that all I was begging for, which is the kind of programming that typically the broadcasters love to have, begging for sympathy and tolerance and understanding, but rather a program that would affirm the totality of the struggles that I have faced as a black gay man and that my community faces as black gay men.
Tongues Untied is about in part the double marginalization of being black and being homosexual and not being too well accepted in either community. When you came out in the movie, you talk about the absence of black gay images in the books and in the posters and even in your own fantasies. What effect did that lack, that absence of black images have on you?
That effect was one of making me feel extremely isolated, as if I was the only one in the world, that made me feel that I myself was unworthy of love, that I had nothing that I could offer, because in gay society, there was nothing that affirmed who I was as a black man. That is, in gay society, all of the icons of beauty, of excellence, of virtue were white. And of course, in black American society, I had no icons that I could look up to, and that everyone worthy of emulation within the black community was resolutely heterosexual, according to the myth. So that for someone who was black and gay and looking for some form of affirmation in larger social life for who they were, who I am, there was nothing there.
You know, in talking about how white you found the gay community to be after you came out, I'm wondering if occasionally the opposite wasn't true, and I'm thinking that for a lot of politicized social movements, there's this almost fear of being perceived as a white middle-class movement, and I think for some of the movements, and I'd include in this the feminist movement, that for blacks who enter the movement, they're so welcome because it's a sign of what people want to be true, that it's not just a white movement.
But what happens that even when one is welcome, one is welcome as a black person, whether one is a black female feminist or a black gay man, when you are welcome into that larger white society, you're welcomed on the terms of that society, not on your own terms.
And how are those two terms different for you? Yeah.
So, for instance, I can go into the Castro to a certain degree if I'm willing to play by the game and dress in the way that white gay men dress, read the books that white gay men read, not discuss issues of race, not bring those kinds of issues up, not discuss the issues and problems of the African-American community when I talk about liberation. If I am willing to subscribe to these narrow notions of liberation that just address sexuality, and if I'm willing to abide by these roles that many white gay men see me as, and that is this super sex stud, with not much intelligence that's really worth addressing or reckoning with, then I will be welcome. I will be accepted. I think that many black gay men have found in moving into white gay societies and trying to assimilate is that when they bring their issues and experiences to bear in addressing how that society should be constructed, how it should move and develop, that when they do so, they encounter tremendous resistance because what they also illuminate in those white gay societies is the racism that pervades that world as much as it pervades the straight world.
Now, you felt, as you stated in the movie, that there's also been a lot of trouble for black homosexuals like yourself to get accepted within black political movements.
Yes, within black society at large, not just politics.
What kinds of places have you been made to feel unwelcome as a man who is out and who sees homosexuality as a political and social issue? Do you know what I mean? I mean, the right to be who you are as being a political social issue.
I mean, there's so many areas of life, but personally, I think because of the nature of my work, which is cultural, I'm a documentary maker.
Yeah.
And of course, you constantly hear within black society, within African-American society and communities, about the need for so-called positive images, the need to redress the wrongs of historic omission in the media culture and the popular culture of America. So that when I start to treat those kinds of issues, as long as I present images that affirm a heterosexist point of view, that is, in which all of the so-called role models are wonderful, black, family, in the most traditional sense, heterosexual people, then I'm fine. The moment that I try to introduce issues of sexual difference into that equation, then I'm suddenly betraying the need for positive images and presenting, in fact, the opposite. And so that when I try to bring to bear the full dimension of my own personality, my own identity, and the communities that I know, that world is seen as somehow pariah and mutually exclusive to this world of black society, which often the black straight middle class would prefer to see.
You say that in some areas you'd get a question like, well, what are you first? Are you black or are you gay? Give me an example of the kind of situation when you've been asked a question like that.
I mean, I think so many of us, you know, as we, particularly when we come out visibly, were challenged on that level. And many black feminists were challenged on that level in the 70s and still are. It's a situation, particularly among so-called Afrocentric revolutionary types, and obviously I'm being tongue-in-cheek here, who demand of you to know, well, when the revolution comes, you know, or when society has to really choose which battles it's going to fight first, who will you align yourself with? Will you be a black person first, or will you be gay, and will you align yourself with the gay people? And often the assumption is that the gay people are pretty much exclusively white. And what I try to do in my work is subvert that, because that what that requires is a level of schizophrenia. It's a level of being able to and trying to hierarchize oneself into these component parts in which you can say, well, I guess I'm black first, and then maybe I'm gay second, and then maybe I'm a man third, and then maybe I'm a person of color, and then maybe I'm a working class. No. The personality of any human being is indivisible. All of that which makes you, and it's integral to you.
One of the things you reveal about yourself in the movie is that you've tested HIV positive. Did you know that when you started the movie, or is that something
Yes.
you found out as you were making it?
No, I knew that before starting it. In fact, it was a major catalyst to my making this movie and to making it uncompromising and searing and honest in the language, in the so-called graphic depictions of our imagery, and also in the quite honest and brutal analysis of racism and homophobia and self-hatred. And I mean self-hatred on the part of black gay men themselves in our society.
Marlon Riggs, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Marlon Riggs' documentary, Tongues Untied, will be shown on many PBS stations next Tuesday night. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.